This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is all to the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North, for the week of January the 5th, 2015, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television, from north and south of the 49th parallel. I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Diane Wild.
And I'm Greg David.
And we would like you to ask, blah, blah, we would blah, 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 for 2015. I'm leaving that in there.
It's
too late to edit. It's too late to edit. Screw it. We would like you to, we would like to ask you to put your television on mute for episode 173 of TVA, the podcast. What do you think we are? Television? We don't edit. What do you think this is? Serial? A professional broadcast?
Don't even get Anthony started on Serial. Although I did enjoy your other Serial podcast.
Oh,
I quite enjoyed that.
See. I did a bit of parody over the break.
Your Ira Glass is spot on.
It was about as close as I could get, considering it's not really Ira Glass, but I couldn't quite adopt a female tone in my voice. So I,
no.
Anyway, folks, welcome back. Welcome to 2015.
My New Year's resolution is to be as smooth and polished on this podcast as possible.
Oh, crap.
No, I'm kidding. Totally.
I hope that's not our New Year's resolution, or else I've failed miserably already.
That's why I said it. So
I know. We have only a few links to talk about this week, but don't worry, folks. If you're here for a long podcast, there's three of us talking. That's the way it works.
Even when there was two of us talking, we had a hard time keeping it short.
Links be damned. We can talk for a long time. Before we get there, though, you can go and check out the podcast at tv-eh.com. There's a podcast button at the top, and you can click on that, and you can check out all of the podcasts. If you weren't there over the break, we did put out some new content, so you can go and check that out there if you happen to miss it. And at the end of the podcast, we'll tell you about all the other places that you can get in touch with us. But first of all, how is everybody's holidays?
Good. Not long enough. Never long enough.
I can tell you that for the last week, I slept.
Yeah, constantly?
Yeah, pretty much.
You hibernated. That's amazing.
Pretty much. There was one day where I woke up at 5 p.m.
Whoa.
I woke up originally at 2 p.m., and then I went, no, that's too early.
What time did you go to bed? I'm guessing it wasn't like 9 p.m. the day before.
No, but it was maybe at about 4 or 5 a.m.
Wow.
Wow. I was actually back at work last week, so holidays are a distant memory to me.
It's like, I'm not getting up until the sun's down, is basically the way it worked. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have any late nights like that. I relaxed a little bit and read and enjoyed family and friends. And for Christmas this year, my family got me a whole bunch of alcohol. So I don't know if that's because I think part of it was because I never seemed to have alcohol when we were doing the podcast. So if I wasn't an alcoholic before, I certainly am starting off the new year, maybe perhaps becoming one.
That's a good resolution to have as well, Greg.
Yeah.
I even have some homemade port that my sister and my brother-in-law brought from Quebec.
Ooh.
Yes. I don't have that tonight, though.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe Diane has port rooibos, and then she could get the stuff up on you.
Yum.
Port rooibos. That's kind of scary. Anyway, like I said, we've got the links coming up in a second, but since we've already just talked about it, I do believe it's time for a beverage update. Considering, Greg, you must have the most exciting drink out of any of us now.
Yeah.
I think you want me to go first?
Yes. Are you sure? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Well, I got a whole bunch of different... I got the port, like I said. I got some wine, and I got a whole whack of beer. So the beer that I'm drinking tonight, it's from the Blue Elephant Brew House in lovely Simcoe, Ontario, Anthony.
Wow.
Yes.
Simcoe, Ontario.
Yes. Which is near Lake Erie,
Yes. Diane,
near Port Dover, and a party place called Turkey Point. That if you're a young lass or fella growing up in southern Ontario, that's kind of a rite of passage to get hammered at Turkey Point. So anyway,
and end up at Turkey Point.
Well, yeah, there's that too. So this is from the Blue Elephant Brew House. It's the product. The name of the beer. It's called Citra. Citra. It was brewed on October the 22nd, 2014, and it is a 5% alcohol. This is all written by hand on the label on the can. And
so this is an artisanal beer, then.
Oh, it couldn't get more artisanal.
Yes, it is artisanal, and it has kind of a sharp aftertaste, but it's quite nice. It's quite nice. So shout out to the Blue Elephant Brew House, folks in keeping warm in Simcoe, Ontario.
Yes. And feel free to get in touch with us if you'd like to know where to send alcohol.
Yes. If you'd like to become a sponsor. Maybe my sponsor.
A sponsor of this segment. If you would like to sponsor.
I can't get tea, but you guys are hoping for alcohol?
I think I might have just a sponsor, just my own personal sponsor to help me through this.
Yeah,
I think there have been several times in the past, Diane, where we've invited tea manufacturers to send you tea.
You know, I actually looked into one, David's Tea, because that's one I usually have, and they actually are quite proud of the fact that they don't do any advertising.
Ooh.
So it's like, I didn't actually ask them. I just happened to see that on some marketing blog thing, but yeah.
They're proud that they don't do any advertising.
My tea aspirations were dashed.
So you advertise for them.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes, you do advertise.
I'm going to switch to Tivana. Damn them.
Yeah, exactly. Diane, you have to beat out the artisanal beer this week.
I don't think I can. I'm down a beverage. I only have two, which is, I feel like I'm not pulling my weight anymore. But I have a gingerbread chai rooibos, which was a Christmas gift, part of a Christmas gift. And it tastes kind of vaguely disgusting, but, the rest of the tea in the gift was really good, but the gingerbread, not my favorite. And other than that, this is using my beloved SodaStream. And usually when I have it, I just have like a sparkling water with a flavoring, as in like a Perrier or something. There's no sweetener or anything in it. This one is, it is kind of an artisanal syrup, I think. It's called Lavender Lemon Balm Lemonade.
Ooh.
And it tastes vaguely less disgusting.
Like Grandma's house?
Kinda, yeah. It's like Grandma's house in a glass. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. It's I can't quite decide if
potpourri.
I like it or not, actually. Yeah. Kinda, yeah. Yeah.
Mm, smell of musty photo albums.
I guess I went interesting rather than delicious this week. And I want a glass of wine, but I actually have to head out, and I don't like to have that right before I drive, so I'll do that when I get back after the podcast.
I just take it with you.
The wine? Yeah.
The roadie, yeah.
Sure, yeah. Good advice, Greg. And how about you, Anthony?
I'm the least exciting this week. I do have a bunch of bourbon sitting beside me, and one of the things I did when I was away away down south is I bought 4 bottles of bourbon. Unfortunately, I don't check bags when I fly, so I couldn't bring any of it back with me. I will leave that to the rest of my family over the next few trips this year, because they all check bags, so they can hide the bourbon in their baggage on the way back. But I am drinking a lovely sugar-free lemon lime crystal light crystal beverage.
Ew.
Chock full of chemicals. Rendered at a chemical plant somewhere in southern Taipei.
I was going to say, but at least I don't feel like Crystal Light is trying to be good. It's just trying to be like a flavored water that, you can pretend.
Well, exactly. Like how much different is mine from your SodaStream drink?
Mine thinks it's delicious. I don't think Crystal Light actually thinks it's delicious.
Your drink has become self-aware.
Exactly.
Whereas my drink is just sitting there going, I don't want to become self-aware.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, we are we're cranking along here. Just to mention, as I did off the top, I think it's been we had two TV ABCs podcasts that have happened since the last episode. Last episode was 172. We had Carmen Moore from Blackstone and erstwhile of Arctic Air, and then Doug Slater, who was working on a whole bunch of shows, but mostly most recently working on Lost Girl. Doing some set design work, so
both of them
were great. Yeah.
I'm enjoying the long form interviews you're doing, Ebony. Not to inflate your ego more than it already is, but
what ego? I don't know what you're talking about. My drink's not even self aware. Come on.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the one with Doug. I mean, Carmen's was great too. I always like to hear the craft, but to hear somebody that's deep behind the scenes working on the set design and that type of thing. And I think a lot of people just don't understand the work that goes into set design, and then just from the building aspect, but then sourcing all of those things that are sitting on the tables and where they get the chairs. We kind of take it for granted as viewers. We just tune into an episode of something and watch the performers, but that lamp on the table had to have been gotten from somewhere, and there's some thinking behind the actual building of the set. If there's an attic set, there's teams of people that put that together. So I like that kind of insight.
Well, exactly. It's like, where do the cameras go?
Yeah.
Where do you hide the cameras, basically?
It's magic, isn't it?
I think so. First of all, you have to have self-aware beverages, and then you'll go from there. We're doing all this pre-talk, of course, folks, because we have less links on the show. And I'm daring myself to try and...
We can't stop babbling.
That's true. Maybe it's time to perhaps go on. Now, we don't necessarily have an official link for all the stuff we're going to talk about next, but if you want to anchor yourself to something as we're talking about the rest of the stuff, there is an article that came out in The Star just earlier today. Article was from December 31st, New Year's Eve.
Or you could just pay attention to the TVA website. We talk about all of these shows on the website.
Yeah. Right. But
how many people listen to a podcast and actually like follow along with the links?
Well, see, I think if they're sitting at work and they say, "Hey, maybe I want to go look at a link while they're talking about it," and maybe they could. I don't know. Anyway, sure. it's a whole bunch of dates about a whole bunch of stuff that's coming up, and this is stuff that is far better served by somebody who is drinking a more aware beverage than mine. So I'm going to kick over to Greg.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well. Yeah, this story basically covers, and like Diane said, based everything that we're going to be talking about over the next several minutes for as long as we can milk it for, are all stories that are going to be on the website in the next couple of weeks, because there's a couple of weeks there between Christmas and New Year's when there really isn't anything new, and then the beginning of January comes and it's mid-season and everything hits the air. So I guess the big one that everybody is talking about, Diane, is the Book of Negroes. I mean, Lawrence Hill's book, made into a miniseries, an international cast, Cuba Gooding Jr., Jane Alexander, Louis Gossett Jr., Republic of Doyle's, Ellen Hawke, Clement Virgo's the director, and that's coming up Wednesday on CBC. That's probably the big one, right, that everybody's talking about?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for one thing, it's got international cred because... Yeah. GoPro, but also, was it Cannes that it premiered at? It had a premiere at one of those international festivals.
MIPCOM.
Yeah, MIPCOM.
MIPCOM? Okay, yeah.
My favorite one to pronounce. MIPCOM.
The favorite com? The favorite of the comms?
Your favorite con, yeah. So MIPCOM, anyway. But yeah, so there are people who have seen it. There's been buzz. It's, got some international exposure. So yeah, definitely, I think that's the prestige drama on any of the networks. I mean, slightly more prestige than, say Yes to the Dress Canada, which also premieres on Wednesday.
Really? I don't know. I would challenge that ranking.
Though, I mean, that got a rave in the Globe and Mail. So, it's just, maybe not quite the same cachet is what I'm saying. Nothing Yes to the Dress Canada.
I mean, that's a guilty pleasure, right? I mean, it's kind of the same thing as Love It or List It Vancouver that turned to W. I mean, it's got... you know, that built-in audience of people that will tune in. But no, I mean, absolutely, you're right. I mean, you're not, you know, you can't compare an award-winning novel to some poor schmucks looking for dresses that fit just right.
The bride's the love versus the, you know, historical drama.
That's right. And then there's a couple of interesting ones. And you know, Diane, you could talk a little bit about Young Drunk Punk that's coming up January the 22nd on City. But Sunnyside I'm very interested in, January 8th on City, because Dan Redican and Gary Pearson are behind this one. And I've seen the first two episodes. And I don't know if you guys saw the Trailer Park Boys when they went off and they did this show with the late Maury Chaykin, and it was something, the Drunken on Drugs Happy Hour.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And the three guys from Trailer Park Boys played all these different characters in this kind of, it was a town, everybody had done drugs, and so they had all these really strange characters played by all three of the Trailer Park Boys. And Sunnyside is kind of like that. It's this small town full of quirky characters, and all of the sketch actors and actresses are all playing multiple characters on it. And Norm MacDonald plays the voice of a guy that lives down in the underground. And he gives advice to people that come up. They line up and then ask him questions through a manhole. And he gives them the answers. Like, it's totally weird. But that show has been getting tons of teasers on the channel, as opposed to a show like Package Deal that got like virtually no, you know, bumpers or anything, no promotion at all. Sunnyside is getting all kinds of promotion, and Young Drunk Punk doesn't seem to be getting any promotion either. So it's really strange how City's kind of deciding what they're going to get behind. But maybe, Diane, you could talk a little bit more about Young Drunk Punk, because you talked to Bruce McCullough, right?
I did, yeah. And hopefully City might, I mean, you know, I'm just trying to give them a strategy. Maybe they're waiting until Sunnyside debuts and then they'll pump Young Drunk Punk,
right,
you know, one at a time.
Say that five times fast, by the way.
I know, I had to actually be careful with that one too. But yeah, so Young Drunk Punk, it's loosely based on Bruce McCullough's own, you know, the ex-Kid in the Hall, his own, you know, upbringing in Calgary. And so, from what he says, I haven't actually seen any of it, but it sounds like it's very, you know, it's of a time and place. So it's Calgary in the 80s. You know, you can tell from the title what the kids are like. I mean, so it's about these two friends. They've graduated from high school and they kind of don't know what's next, and loosely based on his own, you know, experiences. And he plays the dad of one of the characters. So he says it's not like his dad, but, you know, it's shot in the same townhome complex that he grew up in. And he referred to I'm blanking on the name, the one with Less Than Kind. So he kind of thinks,
okay,
he thinks it's like kind of got its own tone, etc., but he said of, you know, existing shows, that's kind of the one that he would most align it with. So that kind of tone, I think, but like I said, I haven't actually seen it. But, you know, ex-Kid in the Hall, you kind of got that prestige factor. I think there's some excitement about it, but I'm not sure that anyone has seen it yet.
Yeah, I kind of got the same vibe that it's kind of a Less Than Kind type of thing.
And I mean, I don't think it's uproariously funny in that, like, it's not like a sitcom where it's joke after joke after joke. My impression is that it's more like the dark kind of, you know, Trailer Park Boys-ish, less than kind-ish. I don't know how to describe what I think it is, but, you know, something that's slightly less sitcom.
I don't think there'll be a laugh track, put it that way.
No.
I mean, that's, yeah. And I mean, the City, you know, between Sunnyside and that, it sounds like they're trying interesting things.
Well, I mean, when I look at how they describe Sunnyside, I look at how they describe Sunnyside as part Monty Python, part Portlandia. I don't even know what that is. I don't know what the bastard hybrid child of those two things is. It's like,
is that Bill Brio calling it that though?
Yeah.
I'm not sure about the whole Monty Python thing. I can't, maybe the Portlandia thing, just because it's a small town and it's these strange characters. But I mean, it's not as if there's anybody doing silly walks or anything like that, or, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
Well, you know, then why would I watch it?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I love Norm MacDonald, so I mean, I might just watch it for that alone, even though it's the voice of Norm MacDonald. So it's like, hey, Norm MacDonald over here, down a hole. Hey, what the hell are you doing up there, you crazy idiots?
That's exactly what the character's like. So he probably literally just did the voice and they added some echo to it. And that, you know, done. You're gold.
See, there you go. If they, producers of Sunnyside, if Norm MacDonald ever up and quits on you, I can be Norm MacDonald down a hole. I'm Norm MacDonald down a hole over here. It's pretty dark.
That's pretty good there, Anthony.
It's like we're with him. It's like he's here.
Yeah, exactly. And because you're so good at that, I'm not going to ruin the hockey game for you, even though it's very, very tempting.
Don't ruin the hockey game. Tonight is tonight, as we're recording, for those of you who just want to be in on the behind the fourth wall, it is the World Junior Championships between Canada and Russia, and I'm recording it as we record. So I'm trying
it's
to
just
avoid
ended,
the score.
It's just ended, so I'm, you know, fighting. I wouldn't.
Wreck it for him.
Yeah, so anyway, I think City is Rogers, and they sort of jettisoned some of their original script, thinking that it didn't maybe fit the brand. They bought FX and brought it to Canada, and these seem like they might fit onto their other platforms more than, say, the Murdoch mysteries that they jettisoned a while ago. You know, so it feels like they're going for slightly edgier comedy, and, you know, I wish them all the luck in the world. We need another, like, really big success in Canadian comedy, I think.
I think TV needs more success in comedy these days.
Well, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, these two are probably going to get a second window on FXX Canada, right? Because that's where they're putting their comedy stuff. Yeah. And speaking of FXXXX Canada.
What, is that three X's? That's tied to a story we might be talking about later.
Three or four, that's right. There's three or four X's on there. Jay Baruchel has got a new show called Man Seeking Woman. Now, I don't know too much about this because they kind of made a big announcement that back at the fall announcement when Rogers had brought anyway, they were focusing a lot on The Strain, but kind of also they were talking about Jay and how he had brought this idea to them, and then it was greenlit, and then it was shot here in Toronto. So Jay Baruchel plays Josh Greenberg, and it says here that he's such a loser that he's drenched daily by his own little rain cloud. And when it comes to women and dating, he makes Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory look like George Clooney. That's from Bill Brew. We don't know too much about it other than it's based on a book of short stories by Simon Rich, who used to write for Saturday Night Live. But hey, I'm all for that. And from what I understand, Jay Baruchel was adamant that this show be shot in Canada. He wanted to bring it to Canada and film it here. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah,
and I'll definitely.
He's always remained steadfastly Canadian. I don't think he's ever moved on a permanent basis. Most of the films he does are up here. But when they say naive 20-something, played by Jay Baruchel, I said, well, really?
Gosh, what a stretch.
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of Jay Baruchel, every character he plays.
Right, right.
Yeah. And the show itself.
Kind of like Michael Cera, the two of them, they don't really.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly, yeah. The show itself is an FXX, like, U.S. show. Yeah. It's an American show, but it's got that, you know, good Canadian pedigree because Jay Baruchel is he's our man.
Where's the dragon that he trains? I just want to know.
I love that movie.
I don't see any.
Anyway, that was a digression, but yeah.
I'm just saying. that's FXX, and then on the premiere on January 13th, so coming up in about a week, is if you remember, we were saying we were waiting for the next great Canadian comedy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is it or not, but it's got some pedigree to it. Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara
who gets to say the title?
in Schitt's Creek. Hey, we got a show called Schitt's Creek over there on CBC. Is a Eugene we're Levy and Catherine O'Hara over there. It says Schitt's in the title. Schitt's.
We're gonna be like having Norm MacDonald with us the whole way, aren't we?
I don't think so. I like the fact that Chris Elliott's also in it, by the way, though. Because Chris Elliott, I think, is absolutely hilarious.
I have never loved him. I mean, I liked him on The Letterman Show, but as sort of the goofy, like, weirdo. I've never really loved him apart from that.
Well, you'll like him on this because he plays a goofy weirdo.
He plays naive 20-something.
Yeah, naive 20-something. Yeah. No, this one I have high hopes for. I've seen several episodes, and it's great. It's really smart for CBC to pick something like this up, because as we've talked about before, they're definitely kind of trying to find their way, and I think that having Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara on their screen is, or on their schedule, excuse me, is a great idea. Well, the interesting thing behind this is that Dan Levy, Eugene's son, is the guy that kind of came up with the idea and then worked with Eugene on the scripts. It definitely shows. If you're into Best in Show or any of those other Christopher Guest movies, you're definitely going to love this, because there's double entendres and it's very smart, no laugh track, very smart, very well done, lots of things going on in scenes in the background and in the foreground, and something you need to pay attention to, and I think it's going to do really well.
But is it a one-camera or three-camera show? Because that makes all the difference.
It's a one-camera.
I'm just joking.
Yeah, it's a one-camera.
Don't get me started.
I know, Diane loves those discussions.
It's a one-camera.
We need to get Jamie Weinman on here, and we can debate the merits of multicam versus one camera shows. He's very much a multicam. He's the McLean's culture critic, and he's very much a multicam proponent. Whereas I'm a who gives a crap proponent.
Yeah, how about we focus on the scripts and
the
characters,
the damn scripts.
And stuff. Yeah,
and I don't deny there's a different tone to it. I just don't think it's as interesting as some people think it is.
Viewers don't care.
Yeah, they care if it's funny or...
When's the last time that you stood around the water cooler discussing the merits of a single camera over a multi-camera? I've never done that. And I write about TV for a living.
Wow. I know a lot of people who don't know what that means. And you would have to show them the difference. You would have to say, sit down with me and watch The Big Bang Theory. See how it's set up. And then you would have to say, sit down with me and watch, The Mindy Project or whatever, see how it's set up. You would actually have to do that level of detail with them for them to absorb what you're talking about when you say that.
And I
know that because I've had to, had that discussion. I haven't actually sat people down, but I've had that discussion.
Well, sit down.
They have no idea what anyone means when they're talking about a single camera show. They have no idea what that means.
Sit down and look at that camera over there.
Wouldn't I be the best friend in the world if I made my friends sit down and watch clips of multicam versus single cam and explain them the difference? I call myself pedantic, but even I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Sit down and look at that camera over there. Now cut. Now let's wait for the camera to move, and now we're going to focus on you. Let's sit down and look at that camera over there.
And here's the craft table.
My favorite part.
What else do we have coming up?
We got Ascension on CBC on February the 9th.
Finally!
Yeah, no kidding, huh? So this
they
is
kept
a,
delaying this one.
Yeah, this is a sci-fi series, which it's being co-produced, right, with sci-fi down in the U.S.
Yeah.
And the lovely Tricia Helfer and Wendy Crewson are on this, as well as U.S. actor Brian Holt. And it's all about hundreds of... Oh, this should be right up your alley, Diane, because it has to do with space and traveling and populating new worlds, right?
Except the funny thing is, I'm not a huge sci-fi fan. I mean, I say that, and then I do like a lot of sci-fi, but it's not a genre I'm drawn to. I like the real thing, If you're actually showing me, if we were actually sending Tricia Helfer to Mars, I would be all over that.
Wow, that's kind of a stirring damnation.
I didn't mean that.
So what are you excited about then with Ascension? What are your expectations when you tune in?
Me? I'm not excited about it other than it's been long delayed and it's departure for CBC, which I like. But unfortunately, it has already aired in the States. Mm-hmm. So, you get those techno-savvy people who have probably already seen it. So I think that's going to hurt the ratings a little bit. But, I just think I'm just so much a cheerleader for CBC trying different things, and as they fail with all of them, I'm my heart is getting crushed a little bit, but not to mention Strange Empire, I'm not excited for the show itself, though I hope it's very good and I will check it out. It's more that I'm excited that CBC is trying a genre that I don't know that I've ever seen on CBC. When was the last time I did a sci-fi show?
It's been a long while, put it that way. Although,
sure they have. I mean, I think they've done everything. I just can't remember.
Although I do have to say that when they rebooted Doctor Who on the BBC back in 2005. CBC was actually a co-producer of that.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. For the season, I think they were.
Yeah,
I
for the first season or two, yeah.
But, yeah.
And there was that very special episode of The Beachcombers where aliens came down and took Relic away.
They abducted Relic.
Yes. Did tests, probes.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch. Can you imagine how long
that was a two-parter, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
How long would it take you to binge watch The Beachcombers? If Netflix had Beachcombers, I mean, I think you'd be there your entire life binge watching.
I think the idea is how long could you binge watch The Beachcombers?
Oh, okay, that's a very different question.
How long would you? Yeah.
This had nothing to do with Canadian TV, but they have square pegs on Canadian Netflix. And so I started to watch it all excited because I loved that show. I loved it when I was 12, you know?
Yeah. That's
some things that just don't translate.
Yeah, it doesn't hold up well.
Yeah, and you get all embarrassed that you actually watched it. And
Yeah, that happens too often.
Yeah.
And then I guess the final one, at least in this story, before we kind of add on some of the other ones on our schedule, is X Company on February the 18th. And again on CBC, deals with the Camp X that was real here in southern Ontario during the Second World War. And it trained spies who then went overseas and worked within Germany and some of the other countries to take down the Germans during the Second World War. I've seen the first episode of this, and it's very good, although, as a bit of a homer, I was kind of hoping that they would be spending more time here in Canada and just showing the training. And maybe they will do more of that as the season goes on, but a lot of the time was spent over in Germany. The setting was Germany.
Yes, and in Hungary.
In Hungary, standing in for Germany. So I was a little bit disappointed about that, but only because I'm such a fan of Canadian history and I wanted to learn about that kind of thing. But the cast is fantastic. Hugh Dillon, Evelyn Brochu, Dustin Milligan, Connor Price. Canada-Hungary co-production from the people that brought you Flashpoint. So I'm expecting big things from this. You know, I don't know if it's going to be a ratings winner necessarily for CBC, but it's certainly of interest to me and the people, I think, judging by the number of people that were at the Canadian International Television Festival session that we had, they're definitely following it because of the people behind it, and that's
I was gonna say the Hugh Dillon and the Flashpoint creators,
Mark Ellis,
to draw that whether they can keep them beyond an episode. I mean, it has to have something beyond the Flashpoint connection, obviously.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen any of this, so I don't know. Like, it has the potential to be something that I would be very interested in, or it has the potential, and this is going to sound like a diss and I don't mean it as one, but it could have the potential to be more like a Murdoch Mysteries, where it's sort of a, you know, I don't know how to put it, but kind of the costume drama thing that, you know, isn't really getting into the nitty gritty. And I have no idea what it will be like. I mean, it could be fantastic or it could be a little bit.
Yeah. There were a couple gripping scenes. Yeah, there were a couple gripping scenes. It definitely wasn't, you know, watered down or anything like that. The interesting part is that one of the characters, it's not listed in this piece, but he has, and I can't think of what the affliction is, but all of his senses are kind of acutely.
Oh, we talked about this before.
Yeah, what is it?
Yes.
Right. So I was kind of trying to, you know, Mark Ellis and Stephanie Morgenstern had said during the session that they were using some special tricks to just kind of show how this guy's affliction was visualized on the show. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of A Beautiful Mind in a way, because it's just kind of, you know, quick brain flashes and numbers and images kind of flashing in front of his eyes to show that he could, you know, had photographic memory and could, you know, kind of take on all this information. It was very well done, and I was entertained.
Were there quick cut muted scenes of his face and his ear, like when he was listening to something?
You know, there were. Yeah, no, they didn't do that. Yeah, bom, 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 bom. No, but there were the quick cuts. There absolutely were, and the quick zoom-ins on photos and names and things like that, and then he would recite all that information back to his stunned commanders.
Listed in the cast as his stunned commander.
Yes, as stunned commander number one.
That's hilarious.
I want to audition for part of stunned commander number four.
Part of my hesitation about this one is because Flashpoint wasn't really to my taste, and I think it was very well done. I'm very proud of its success. I was a big supporter of it. I think, you know, taste is taste, you know, but for me, it was a little bit too pat. It was a bit like everything was very wrapped in a bow, emotionally manipulative, I felt. So I'm curious to see whether X Company, because the material interests me more, I'm interested to see whether it draws me in more than Flashpoint did.
Well, did you say, how many episodes did you say you saw of this, Greg?
I've just seen the first one.
Just the first one? Did it? I mean, it's hard to tell with the first episode, but did it come across to you as though it was going to be set up as a procedural type of storyline, or more of just a long arc?
The first one was set up as there was a mission that they had to accomplish, and at the end of the episode they had finished the mission and they had gotten together to talk about the mission. So there certainly was closure at the end of that first one.
Okay.
You know, I think Diane brings up a good point. Are they going to do that? Will they wrap up every episode in a bow? I would have said no, because it's, you know, if it's the Second World War, there's kind of the ongoing campaign, but they could very much do it that way, couldn't they? So they could say, you know, here's the mission of the week or the mission over the next couple of weeks. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how they do that if it's pat.
Yeah. And I just felt like, I mean, to some degree, I felt like a lot of Flashpoint episodes didn't really earn the emotion. They went to the proven sort of, you know, you have to be upset that the baby's in jeopardy, or, you know, like,
right.
I kind of felt like I want this to risk more than Flashpoint. Flashpoint did. And, you know, I say that knowing it's an unpopular opinion because, you know, apparently Flashpoint is the best Canadian show in the last 25 years, but according
of all time, Diane.
Of all time. Yes.
Wow.
We had that better than SCTV. We had that poll that we're bitter about. So I know that, you know, a lot of people loved it, but I think, you know, that doesn't, that a lot of people actually love the, you know, the comfort food. And I think Flashpoint was great comfort food, but I'm hoping for more from X Company, and that says more about me than, you know, any fairness.
Okay. So if we're going off the chart here, Greg, you've got a couple others on your list.
Yeah. Very interesting. APTN, you know, here in Canada, we haven't had a late night talk show since I did a little bit of research. It would have been the Mike Bullard Show, which Mike Bullard had on Global. And that was after open mic.
I beg to differ, sir.
You haven't seen
Being Frank, I think.
Oh, you know what? I went on the CH website. I went on the CH website and I looked for Being Frank. Is that still on the air?
It is still on the air. I don't know if they're old episodes.
Okay.
But it is. I don't know if it's being newly produced.
Is that Canada-wide, though, or is that just in Ontario?
Yeah, it's CH, which is Canada's superstation.
Yeah.
I've never heard of CH. Okay.
I think you get CH in Vancouver.
We probably do. I just, you know.
Yeah, CH. So CH is channel 11 out of Hamilton. And it doesn't hit every market. But
right.
I think it hits the major markets across Canada. But Being Frank was the guy who owned an apple juice company buying up time, late night time, to produce his own talk show.
Really?
Yeah, and it was legit. Like, he would sing and stuff, right?
Oh yeah, it was a cheap set, and he would do it like a variety talk show, where he'd come on, sing a song, and then have a guest on that you went, you know, have a guest on that was reminiscent of a guest that you would get on Ed the Sock, basically.
Right.
Kudos to him for trying. I mean,
yeah.
He lived his dream. He lived his dream.
Till the money ran out.
That's hilarious. I think Ralph Ben Mergie was the last one I ever watched, and I just get a kick out of his name, so he's the one who sticks in my head.
Okay, well, all right. So,
and that was like 25 years ago or something.
Right, right. So APTN has jumped into the ring, in the late night ring, with this show called Guilt Free Zone, starring Derek Miller, who is an Aboriginal singer-songwriter. He's won Junos for his work, and he's hosting this show. That there's six episodes of it that they shot across the country, and it's all about not only showcasing Aboriginal talent, whether that be, you know, stand-up comedians, actors, actresses, and then kind of a round discussion, frank discussion about sex and alcohol and other taboo subjects. So Derek Miller's mantra is that to not be ashamed to talk about any of these subjects. So Guilt Free Zone debuts tomorrow, Tuesday night, on APTN at 10 p.m. And I saw the first episode, and it was really strange because he's a musician, so he's not really used to sitting behind a desk and asking questions of people, and yet that didn't stop him from asking questions. And so he had a couple of ladies come out. One of them is, she is a nurse. She's also a singer-songwriter, and I think she's an actress. So they spent the first couple of minutes talking about the importance of wearing condoms, and then she suddenly stood up and sang. And then they went to break. And then they, and then his next guest was an actress who's in I think at least one episode of Mohawk Girls. And then she got up and sang. He had a character that came through the came across the stage dressed as Jesus, riding a Segway.
By the way,
that was chapter 25 of my autobiography, Jesus on a Segway. Yeah.
Just because he was looking for a Segway. Derek Miller said, we need a Segway. So Jesus came through on us, literally on a Segway.
Wow.
That's hilarious.
And then he closed out the episode by performing with the house band. And it was pretty amazing. It was definitely rough around the edges. There were definitely moments where it didn't seem as though anybody really knew what to say. Like, there were several very uncomfortable pauses in the discussions. But overall, I've got to give them credit because this Derek Miller kid, he knows how to perform on stage. Maybe could do a little bit better in the interviewing. But I got to give them credit. I was entertained for the half an hour that I watched it. This week's episode, like I said, was about sex. Next week is all about marijuana. So I'm definitely going to tune in and watch
that. And singing.
That. And singing. Marijuana and singing. It was incredible.
Kudos. I mean, it's not an easy format to tackle, you know, this kind of half variety, half talk show. But the thing is, the reason why they don't do it is because, first of all, it's tough to get guests on a nightly basis.
Yep.
I mean, it's really tough. I mean, you hear about the fact that you've got four or five major late night shows in the States, and they fight each other to get guests. Mm-hmm. And I forget what the name of the book was that had all the backroom wars going on in the States about basically threatening celebrities that if you go
late shift.
Yeah, late shift. That if you go on this show, you can't come on our show and all this stuff. And trying to find, but it's always been tough to tackle. Now, admittedly, doing this,
I don't think they're going after Tom Cruise on this show though.
No, but doing a short run approach to it might be the better way to go, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
And to be, it sounds like, unscripted, mm-hmm. Which is very much picking up the mantle from where Craig Ferguson just left it.
Right.
You know, sitting down at the interview, you're going to have times where there's going to be awkward pauses while somebody's thinking about an answer or mm-hmm. doesn't know how to answer something, but at least it's far more genuine and authentic than it is than having the major talk shows, which just script everything down to the last second.
No, absolutely. And again, you know, spotlighting Aboriginal talent, which I think is, you know, certainly underutilized. I mean, you know, there isn't anything like that really going on outside of APTN. So kudos to them for doing that as well. So you guys got to tune in and watch it and tell me what you think maybe the next time that we chat or hit me up on Twitter because I'm dying to know what you think about it.
If you've got cable, you've got APTN.
Yes, you do.
That's the way it works.
And look for Being Frank on CH as well.
Also, APTN does a pretty good job of streaming almost all of its shows on its website.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And they really, we keep saying this, but they are a network to watch. I mean, if you want to complain about Canadian TV not taking risks and, you know, not having enough stuff on, I mean, go to APTN and see what they're doing. They're crazy there.
I mean, the coverage that we do, Diane, I mean, we've got Mohawk Girls, Blackstone just finished, Guilt Free Zone. That's three just off the top of my head. TVO announced today that season two of Hard Rock Medical is coming to TVO, but season two of Hard Rock Medical already aired on APTN, and you can watch that entire series on their website as well. So they're doing a lot of good things over there.
Yeah, they are.
So, you know, Storage Wars Canada, I mean, say what you want about that show. Yes, it's a total ripoff of Storage Wars down in the States.
Really?
Yes.
I thought it brought some bold new ideas to the concept of Storage Wars.
You know, the one interesting thing about Storage Wars Canada is that here in Canada, they can take over your storage locker after a month, whereas down in the States, it's a longer period of time.
Yeah, well, that's because there might be someone in the States sitting in there with a gun. So here in Canada, it's just Norm MacDonald just going, hey, I'm in a storage locker over here.
So you know what you're getting with that, and that returns this Thursday, the 8th, on OLN is what it's returning to. Sorry, Diane, did you want to say something?
Well, I keep trying to like interject about how horrible I think this show is, and that it shouldn't be on OLN because it has nothing to do with outdoor life. But you know,
they're outdoors.
They have to go outdoors to get to the storage locker, Diane.
Yeah.
Outside of Brampton.
These kinds of lifestyle reality, whatever you want to call them, shows drive me nuts. They're just, to me, they're just filler.
I don't know what you're talking about. I think that's a really harsh. That's a real harsh indictment.
They're filler for people who just kind of want to veg in front of the TV, which there's nothing wrong with that, but you don't need Storage Wars Canada in order to do that.
What about The Liquidator, which is based out of Vancouver? Where do you stand on The Liquidator?
Oh, I hate that show. I absolutely hate that show. But kind of the same, it's a knockoff of every other show like it. And it shouldn't be on OLN. And yeah.
I'm always amazed that he can buy up a warehouse full of sofas. Like, where do they go after? How does he sell all of those? Tell me, Diane.
I don't know. I think we need The Liquidator, like the next generation, before we can understand.
I think we should have like the amazing Storage Wars race, where they just go to different locations in Canada to bid on storage lockers.
My contention is nobody likes these shows. They watch them because they're there, but nobody likes these shows. It's impossible.
This is the type of show for people who lose their remote control and find themselves on a station.
Your cat is sitting on your lap and you can't get up.
I'm too lazy to get up. Yeah. I'll just leave it on The Liquidator. All right, well, The Liquidator is on the 8th as well. All right, Diane. Where do you stand on Chopped Canada on the 9th on Food Network?
I'm not as opposed to it because I'm just not a cooking show kind of person, but I know people who love anything to do with cooking shows, like love. So yes. Yeah. And I'm more of a real estate person. Like I would like the Love It or List at Vancouver. That's more my speed.
Yeah. See, I like,
but I'm not saying like, I don't actually sit down and watch it. Like to me, these are, again, I just don't understand that these are appointment television.
I like food shows, but I don't like cooking shows. I like them traveling. I like them traveling around, trying different kinds. Like,
oh yeah,
you
okay,
know that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
I'm kind of lumping them all together, but yeah
the travel food shows, but the cooking shows, I don't need to see like the competition cooking shows.
I do actually know people who love Chopped Canada, whereas I don't know anybody who loves The Liquidator or Storage Canada.
Nobody admits to that.
Yeah,
wasn't The Liquidator just the version of Chopped Canada where they make smoothies?
It's just yes, smoothies, fizzy drinks, teas. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, Greg, what post is it that is always at the top of our, like, most...
Oh, it's the... guys that do the... Oh.
Sorry, aren't but it's I not trouble? One of these. It's one of these, like...
It's Canadian Pickers. Canadian Pickers.
Oh, right. Canadian Pickers. It's yeah. always in our top 10 most, like, clicked on links, like... From now till the end of time, it will be for some reason. I think we're the only ones who posted anything about it.
It hasn't been on in a year.
But yeah. even the people comment on that. Comment yeah. to say how much they hate the people.
Yeah.
But it's these shows are marathon fodder. If you go into networks over the holidays,
yeah.
you just see like 24 hours of these shows and you go, what the hell's going on?
What does that do to you? Like, if you're trapped that long on the couch, I think, like, we should call paramedics.
Well, what happens is you end up eating your feelings, is what happens. if it's a cooking show, like, You Gotta Eat Here, which is coming back on the 30th.
I like that show.
Well, no, and I was just going to say, then you plot your visits to these towns, yeah. and then you go and you eat there. And you're incredibly hungry the entire time that you're watching it. And yeah. then, again, you find yourself just eating whatever's in the house.
You know, You Gotta Eat Here, if you haven't seen it, is basically the Canadian version of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Right. John Cattucci goes...
John Cattucci as a nowhere near as annoying.
No, that's right.
Unfortunately, I hate Guy Fieri. Yeah, I can't stand him.
Unfortunately, John doesn't do any of his old stuff from the doo-wops, which would make it fun. But, because he's a stand-up comedian and says right up front that he's not a chef, but he knows good food. And I love the fact that I've eaten in several places here in Toronto that have been featured on the show. I was actually up in Orangeville over the weekend and ate in a place that he suggested, and it was fantastic food. So if it's going to get me around Ontario and eating food, I'm all for it.
If they can't, go ahead.
I just can't agree with you, Anthony. I like the ones, and I don't, again, they're for me not appointment viewing, so I see them very rarely, but the ones that are sort of travelogues with the cooking or the food.
Yeah, if they can't show a dish being made in 30 seconds or less, then I really don't care.
You're out.
Yeah, like it's like I like the quick cuts. It's like, so we put in this, we put in this, we put in this, we put in this, we put in this. Half an hour? Yep, okay, there we go.
this isn't a Canadian show, but that Anthony Bourdain one, what is it called?
The one on CNN?
Yeah, it's basically a travelogue.
Yeah, so I've liked all of his shows.
Yeah,
No Reservations was a little bit more foodie, mm-hmm. But the one he does for CNN now, and I'm forgetting the title off the top of my head, but
Parts Unknown.
It's essentially No Reservations, but with less food. But he tackles a little bit more political cultural than he did on No Reservations.
But I think food is an interesting way to get into some of that, and even something like You Gotta Eat Here, there is sort of that anthropological, if you want to get hoity-toity, element to it a little bit.
Yeah, except and You Gotta Eat Here in Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. They don't walk outside of the restaurant.
No, but yeah, let's go check out the scene
in Orangeville.
Yeah. No, they don't even show the parking lot. They're just in the door.
Yeah,
talking to the folks. So yeah, so there's this cooking shows, and then what else have we got? Helix is coming back on the 19th. Sci-fi. Series that's shot in Montreal, Billy Campbell. This time around, they're going to be on a cruise ship where some weird stuff is going on. There's going to be an outbreak on a cruise ship, so that's going to be interesting.
Like norovirus?
Pardon me?
Like norovirus? Like Norwalk?
Well, the kind of virus that turns...
That doesn't sound very sci-fi exciting.
No, it turns them into zombies, really fast zombies that leak black goo from the X-Files.
That's wow. Better than...
Yeah, the first season was really good.
If they called it Zombie Cruise Ship, they'd get more watchers, I think.
Zombie Cruise Ship 2, Electric Boogaloo.
I actually know nothing about Helix. I didn't know it had any kind of Canadian element. It's totally off my radar, so I will need to do some looking into that one.
No, I was just going to say, 19-2 is coming back that same night. So Bravo just finished a marathon of season one of 19-2 over the weekend. And it's a really good show. Cop drama. I think we've talked about this before. It's the Anglo version of the Radio Canada series, which is a big hit in Quebec and has been for several years. And this first episode back is going to follow basically the exact same storyline as the French version did, and it involves a high school shooting. And from what I've heard, some pretty stunning visuals, not for the faint of heart. There's been a little bit of controversy in Quebec when that episode came out, so it'll be interesting to see what kind of feedback they get for the anglicized version here. But that's a really good show. Very gritty, very real, almost documentary style, the way that they shoot it with the visuals. Very well-acted and well-written as well.
This is one that, again, I haven't watched, and it was deliberate because I am so sick of cop shows that I just couldn't take another one. But I've heard so many good things about it that I do feel like I need to, revisit season one and kind of get on board and, check it out. Because I've heard that, it doesn't matter even if you're not really into the cop show genre or you're sick of it. This is a very different kind of one. And I say that, I like something like The Wire, which, on its surface was a cop show. But I've heard that 19-2 is, yes, it's a cop show, but it's not like the procedural kind of, not what I was just objecting to about Flashpoint. It's not that tie everything up in a bow and everything's pat and what the emotional arc of everything is going to be. I've heard that this is quite good. So I do feel like I have been remiss, except that I thought I was retiring from the site. So I will revisit it again.
Yeah, no closed-ended episodes. And honestly, there's just kind of a feeling of dread every episode. You just think, what's going to happen next? And it's not going to be good.
I did see the opening of the first episode, and the guy's partner gets shot in the head, and he's bleeding all over the face.
That sets the tone.
And then I turned it off because I thought, okay, I'm just not in the mood for something that's not happy. So yeah. I'll come back and revisit when I'm in a better mood.
When does somebody go to a bistro in Orangeville?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on pop dramas, Anthony? Do you feel the same way? Are you kind of over that genre?
Well, put it this way. The genre itself doesn't bother me, but what I haven't seen enough of lately is anything that differs enough within the genre.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. I mean, when I watch a show now, it's like, okay, this is a cop drama that looks like this cop drama. This is a cop drama that looks like this cop. Not even looks. That tonally plays out like this cop drama. Like, I haven't seen enough exploration within that genre. And
right.
I understand that if you want to explore, you don't get into that genre for the most part. But I'm waiting. If I can find a show that does interesting things within there, the show that I liked and they canceled on me was when they did The Bridge a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
the original version mm-hmm. of The Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was a very different kind of story than what they normally tell in a cop show. And I actually quite liked that. And then they were about to renew it. They were about to shoot season two and they canceled it. And
yeah.
I was like,
that was CTV. And I've heard that it wasn't their fault, that it was, something behind the scenes that the network had no control over. But
yeah,
that was, they did renew it. And then they sent a news release out that was like, we've decided to do these other shows. And oh yeah, by the way, we had to cancel The Bridge. So
don't.
But I kind of felt bad for them.
I've been jaded ever since then.
And they kind of, we've gotten away from it. The industry seems to be getting away from it a little bit, but there was a time where everything was a cop show and it just, and they were all these, you know, Rookie Blue and Flashpoint. And they all kind of followed, like Anthony said, this template. And I have never loved cop shows. I'm not just talking about Canadian TV cop shows, but it just seemed for a time that that's all our industry could do. And they kept trying to churn out cop shows because that's what would sell to the United States or internationally, and they would sort of genericize them so they could say that, oh yeah, we're wearing Toronto on our sleeve, except that we're never mentioning the word Toronto and we're, you know, fuzzing out all the license plates, but look, right. There's a CN Tower that nobody outside of Toronto is going to recognize.
I'm a proud member of Big City Police Force.
Yes, exactly. But I mean, so 192 in my mind got painted with that same brush, and I have been told many, many times that that's not fair and that I need to revisit.
Well, if that's not your thing, maybe Mr. D is, because that's coming back for another season on the 20th. And did you guys
nice
know,
segue, Greg?
Did you guys? Is it Jesus on a segue?
I don't think it didn't reach Jesus levels. Oh,
okay.
That way.
Did you guys know that City and CBC have teamed with Mr. D so that it's going to be the second window on City?
Yeah, I saw that recently. I think Playback had that. And so I kind of retweeted it because of the headline. But
yeah.
there was no actual story I could post about it because it's, of course, behind a paywall.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's interesting. CBC and Rogers kind of sharing. They're playing
really?
Nice in the playground again.
Well, they're sharing that entire floor of CBC for hockey.
Well, that's my point, right? Is it really
go ahead,
interesting?
Anthony.
Or is it part? Or sorry, is it part of their? What are we calling it again?
Their overlords.
No.
Over,
what is their? What is their campaign again?
Oh, space for us all.
Yes, a space for us all.
I think this is. I mean, honestly, I think. Yeah. My joking aside, I think Mr. D was a bit on the bubble. It's not getting huge ratings. If this is a way to sort of keep it alive, fill some network space. I mean, I always bash networks for taking one show and putting it on all of their networks and counting it as CanCon across all of their platforms. CBC and Rogers don't have a lot of opportunity to do that. CBC has very little opportunity to do that other than their news documentary kind of stuff. And Rogers has some opportunity to do that. But I think, you know, so that's a downside to me is that, you know, you're not getting as much content. But I just kind of feel like this feels like it was a way to help keep the show alive. And
is it now an opportunity to have one Canadian show go across two complete networks?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the downside. Because CBC doesn't usually do that, but they've partnered in this way before, so it's just unusual because Mr. D is an existing show that's been around for at least a couple of seasons, so it's a strange little partnership, and I don't quite know what to make of it.
They're doing a lot of it lately. There was the one episode that that Greg and I recorded back before the holidays where we had, what, two or three instances of CBC just partnering up with Rogers here and Shaw here and
Weather Network.
Whoever we can reach out to and partner with, we're going to partner with.
And it really is one of their strategies. And I mean, that's how the Olympics have, you know, happened, you know, the last couple times, you know, first CBC and Rogers tried to partner for that. And you know, Rogers and Bell partnered, and like there's all kinds of weird partnerships that go on because, you know, CBC's hurting financially. So I kind of feel like they're trying whatever they can to make it work. City's motivation just seems like, well, that'll count as CanCon for us. Like, I don't, but for me, if CBC is doing whatever they can to keep scripted series alive, I'm kind of, I'm tentatively supportive, given that I don't have any details of what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah, and then I guess the other thing, you know, looking at this calendar is that, you know, Lost Girl is continuing, but so we'll be back next week with new episodes of Heartland, new episodes of Murdoch Mysteries, and Strange Empire is coming back next week as well. So all of those Canadian favorites come back in the next week or so.
A whole chock full of Canadian television goodness coming at you for the new year.
Diane, where do you stand on Strange Empire? I mean, we're kind of midway through the season, I guess. What are your thoughts? Because I've been watching it, but I've been kind of watching it after the fact a couple of days later. So have you been kind of watching it a little bit more like day and date? Maybe we lost her.
I don't know. Maybe I think we lost Diane.
She just doesn't want to talk.
Oh, sorry. I was on mute. Apparently, I just didn't want to talk to you, but sorry,
that
you
was were talking. It. I just muted myself because I was swearing at the cats.
Yeah, no, I still have a bit of a cold, so I've been muting myself, so I cough, but I forgot to unmute. Sorry, Strange Empire. Yeah, because I've been reviewing it, I've been watching it fairly regularly. There's been some that I've had to miss because I've been away, but I've caught up with the episodes. I mean, it's one of my struggles with doing weekly reviews. I find it hard to assess something that is that serialized immediately before you've seen the bigger picture of where they're going towards. So I really loved it at the beginning. Then I kind of thought, I'm not sure where it's going. And, you know, I'm along for the ride, but I find it really hard to assess an hour long segment of what is essentially whatever it is. I can't even remember how many episodes are in the season, but 8 or 13 or whatever it is. You know, it's heavily serialized, and I'm on board, but the further we get into it, the less I'm surprised that it hasn't been getting great ratings. And I think it's hopeless for people to kind of jump in partway through. You have to catch up on it because it really is, it's a story that's being broken into these 1 hour segments, but it's very difficult to jump in when you've missed some of it. So it just seems like there's not much hope for ratings to get higher. I have talked to Lori Finstad recently, who she's planning for a second season. If it gets a second season, and they expect to hear fairly soon, it's going to be far less serialized, partly for her own sanity, because in order to get a writing staff, like, she can't really have it that heavily serialized and, you know, segmented out to other writers. And I think that might be a better solution, because there are times when I've had to miss some episodes and then catch up later, I've sort of lost track of, that's like, to track all of the things. Anyway, that's a really long way, and it sounds more negative than I mean. I am enjoying it, but it's hard for me to go out and say everybody must watch this, because I'm not even sure. I kind of feel like, till the end, I'm not sure I really, you know.
Is there an easy?
It's a big commitment.
Yeah, have they provided an easy way for our viewers to catch up on back episodes? Like,
CBC is great too about putting previous episodes online. It's just that you have to be really dedicated. I would say if you aren't hooked by the first three episodes, you're probably not going to continue to get hooked. We've had one of our sort of faithful commenters on our site, Alicia, has said that she she was still watching, but she really wasn't liking it for a period, and now she's back on board. And I kind of feel, I see where she's coming from. I mean, there have been some episodes where I'm just like, to honestly evaluate the single episode out of context, I mean, this wasn't an hour that I'm like, oh my God, you have to see this hour.
Yeah.
It's more fits into this broader picture. Going with that broader picture is it's difficult to sort of talk articulately. So I've struggled a bit with that in doing the reviews and in telling people that they have to watch the show. I mean, I definitely am grateful that CBC took this risk. I'm grateful that, you know, this story is very interesting, what it's doing thematically. I think it's very interesting writing. I think it's quite poetic writing. I think there's beautiful visuals to it. So, you know, I've got like 1.5 thumbs up, but I feel like that half thumb is like, but I mean, I don't know, you're kind of going to get lost if you're not paying really careful attention. And I can't tell yet what that payoff is going to be. So, you know,
right.
Ask me when it's all over if I think that you should have watched the whole thing. Which is DVD. A bit wishy-washy.
Yeah.
But what was that?
Oh, I said, should we get the DVD? No, I totally understand because yeah. I covered a couple of weeks when you were away and I thought, okay, what is happening? Like, I kind of jumped.
Yeah, if you just jump in.
And really I liked the characters. I just had a hard time catching up with who was who and why so-and-so hated so-and-so. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, I love the visuals. There are a couple of characters that have really jumped out at me, but it's, yeah, you're right. Maybe it was an unfair question for me to ask because it's definitely not one of those shows where you can kind of judge it week to week. You've got to kind of look at the big picture at the very end and say, okay, well, what was it worth it and what did I get out of it?
But I think it's an interesting question because, I mean, there are a lot of different people have done this sort of navel-gazing of what it means to write weekly reviews and what it means to not write weekly reviews. Like, there is the danger that if you rave about, say, the first episode and then you never revisit the show,
yeah,
judging on something that, you know, they put like, you usually put like 3 years into the pilot and then you get like 6 weeks to do another episode. So I think it's an interesting experience for me. It's the first time I've done weekly reviews of something so heavily serialized. And yeah, I'm not sure I would recommend it to myself.
I think it really speaks to the importance of, and they do this more in the U.S. than they do here, of using subsidiary networks that are tied within the same silo to play mini marathons partway through seasons.
Yeah, CBC doesn't exactly have that. They do repeat it during the week, but I'm not sure they really do marathons.
No.
I think they, you know, I don't know.
They probably should.
They should, but then I think, like, what else do they have to fill the schedule with? I think they're probably worried if they do a marathon, it's getting fairly low ratings anyway, that the marathon isn't going to do big business. But then, I mean, really, there's got to be a time when they don't have anything else.
CBC doesn't do marathons of anything.
They don't, but, you know, that doesn't mean they couldn't.
Right.
I mean, I think they need to relook at what they do.
Yeah, that's true. But part of the issue is, if you're saying that it's a problem from a narrative perspective to pick up one of these shows midstream anyway, then how many viewers are you going to get if you're re-showing this series at a different time in the year? Like, someone's not going to drop in on episode 4.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean, too.
Yeah, so, I mean, unless they're planning on doing a marathon with it, it would seem to me to say, even when you're doing the repeat, say, in the summer or at a different time of year, repeat the marathon kind of thing. It's like, if you want to see the first 3 episodes of this show, you know, go over onto whatever it is, Bold or whatever the heck it is, tomorrow night and watch the first 3 episodes and you'll be caught up.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, there is a discussion that, you know, isn't very popular about, I don't know, it's the distinction between should CBC be chasing ratings or should they be doing shows that nobody else is going to touch? This show says some really interesting things about who we are as a country, where our what our history was, how we were born out of this violent, very, you know, sexually charged, racially charged sort of origin story. It's an interesting fictionalized account of this that goes against some of what we think of ourselves or some of what we're taught in schools about, you know, I mean, a lot of people will say Canadian history is so boring, you know. It's not, that makes it sound like an eat your vegetables kind of show, and it's not, but it feels like the kind of show CBC should be doing. And, you know, but then you say, is 20,000 viewers enough? And, you know, there's some shows that private networks are doing that they're trying to get ratings and they don't have any redeeming value to them necessarily other than trying to be entertainment. And, you know, they're getting about that. So I kind of wish, I keep saying this, but I see what a hard position they're in, but I wish they didn't have to chase ratings. I mean, there's a point where it's just not worth it to continue, but I wish and I hope that it gets a second season because I don't think CBC's mandate should just be about ratings. I think it should be about quality as well and about, you know, what the show is trying to do you, and, you know, but that's a little bit rose-colored glasses of me, where I don't have to worry about financing it, for example.
Right. But I think there's also a difference between chasing ratings and finding the most effective way to get your stories across. Mm-hmm. And in this case, if you haven't taken advantage of something like, you know, doing it, let's say, a catch-up mini marathon, then it's not about ratings at that point. It's about saying, hey, somebody, you can jump in mid-season and you can still be part of this story, or else it feels like you're not part of the club. In other words, instead of the nature of a serialized story being exclusionary once you get to episode 3 or 4, let's find a way to bring people back into the loop. And I don't know that they're doing it that effectively. It's not about the ratings part. It's just about let's get people caught up.
Well, and I don't think they did the, like, because when they saw that the initial ratings weren't very good, they added a second showing in the week. But I didn't actually hear about that other than I have a friend who works there who told me that. And so that, to me, is a miss. I mean, they probably advertised it on their network, but if you're not watching CBC anyway, you're not going to see that. And they shouldn't just be advertising to their own audience, because that's, you're never going to be able to shift your audience if you're advertising your new, riskier shows to your existing audience. You need to try and bring new audiences in. And I know they're trying. I'm not saying anything that they haven't thought of, but you're right that, you know, adding that second showing, they do that with all their shows. Most of their shows have a second showing in the week, but that's not helping the jumping in serialized aspect.
Right. Because if you don't know that
I don't know that a marathon would be great, but
if you don't know that the first showing was on, you're not going to know the second showing's on.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I'm saying, but also it doesn't help catching up.
Yeah.
So you're just have another day now to choose from, but it's already online. You can catch up online if you're, you know, that interested in it. But I'm not sure what they're doing to support that either. So I don't have any solutions. I'm not saying necessarily they, you know, are doing things badly and they should listen to me. Some shows just don't hit with an audience.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a worthwhile show. It's an interesting show. I'm going to be really fascinated to, I would like to at some point, like, not just do an episode review, but look back on the season. And so see what the season was doing, and have that be sort of the final thing.
Right.
But, you know, again, I keep saying this, but all these riskier shows, the kinds of shows that I want a public broadcaster to be doing, it kills me a little bit when they don't succeed, even though that's way too much pressure to put on a single show, because most television doesn't succeed. Whether it's Canadian or American or what, it just, most television doesn't succeed. So to have the entire Canadian industry's hopes sort of resting on a single show is ridiculous.
Oh, we're doomed. We're doomed.
Oh, we are. Well, we are, but that's a whole different story.
We're going to rest all of our hopes on Being Frank. shall we rather quickly bullet through the last couple links that we have here?
Well, I almost think maybe we just wrap it up.
I just so that it's not out of date 2 weeks from now, I just want to let's quickly mention that you may have heard some stories coming out over the past couple of days about Netflix upholding geo-blocking rules. If you're unfamiliar with what that is, some of you might be using a proxy server or a VPN to access American Netflix. In other words, to make it look like your computer is accessing Netflix from the United States. Netflix is saying that it's going to crack down on that, but it also says that we're not going to do anything different than we've been doing. So,
yeah, well, and I use the VPN, and I haven't used it for months to try and access American Netflix, but I did this weekend and it worked. And the story quotes a VPN service saying our customers haven't had an issue. So it seems like kind of a non-story that was originally posted by a torrent site. And there are people who have had issues, but it seems fairly specific, like Android apps on their phone. Like
this is very much the MPAA in the United States complaining about the fact that there might be some Canadians or Brits or other places where Netflix happens to have their service that are watching the U.S. feed of Netflix so they can get different movies. That's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the reporter actually contacted me because I think they were going to write a follow-up story. I'm not sure if they did, because one thing I told him was that, well, it's not a problem for me. I have been able to access it. And then they added this bit on the story about how they've talked to this VPN provider who says, yeah, our customers haven't had any problems. So it seems like kind of a non-story. But I mean, he wanted to get into it as, would this help, like, Show Me and Crave TV? Would it help Netflix Canada be more determined to get more rights? And I kind of think all of that is kind of no, like, this particular thing isn't going to do any of that. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the streaming online service world in the near future, but I don't think this has any effect because it's not different. And Netflix US has every right to try to counter these VPN services. I think it's a losing game. I think there's always a way that technology can keep a step ahead, and there's always, you know, I think it's a bigger issue of piracy. It's a bigger issue of rights and licensing, because if you look in the comments of the story, it drives me crazy. I mean, most people have no idea what they're talking about.
No.
Of course, that doesn't stop them from commenting. It has nothing to do with the CRTC. It has nothing to do with CanCon. It has to do with rights and licensing from the original copyright holder. So the studio decides, I'm going to sell this license to Netflix US, and these are the rights you can buy. If you want to buy these rights, it costs this much more. If you want to buy these rights, it costs this much more. I mean, it has nothing, absolutely nothing. The CRTC does not regulate Netflix.
Right.
Period. Like, they don't. That's been part of the whole CRTC hearings for the last several years.
And this is what the scary part is for me, is that some people, quite justifiably so, when they're in a public place, might want to use a VPN in order to access Netflix. Like, if you're in an airport and you don't want to directly go through the airport because you don't want people to know what you're watching on your Netflix account, you might go through a VPN, which is something that you could use on your phone or on your laptop. And Netflix, in my mind, shouldn't have the right to crack down on that. In other words, if I'm paying for a service and I choose to access it through a VPN, even, like, they're cracking down on VPNs, period. Because they can't crack down necessarily on VPNs just from out of country, because it's hard to know from where the original one's coming from. So in other words, the only way that they can crack down on a VPN or a proxy server is if they see like 10,000 requests coming from one IP address. I mean, that's the easiest way to do it. And then they can say, oh, that's just, you know, 10,000 people who are going through the same IP address to access us. But it might be someone who's legitimately got privacy concerns if they're in a public place. And so for them to crack down on this, to me, is really going against a lot of aspects of privacy and net neutrality that they should be careful about, especially considering they're a web service.
And to be clear, Netflix has said they are doing nothing different than they have ever done. This was a torrent site who had reports of people on social media saying they couldn't access it. And so they created the story out of it, when Netflix is saying, no, like, yes, we have these kinds of safeguards. And I see your point, but I don't think that really matters that much. I mean, Netflix can do what they want with that. I don't think there's any, I can see they're getting pressure from the networks and the studios to make sure that these licensing agreements are being maintained. I wish they wouldn't, but I actually don't use it a lot to access US Netflix. And one thing I told the reporter too is I do it the other way too. When I'm in the States, sometimes I need to catch up on a show because I, I'm writing an article about it. And so I need to see a Canadian show, and it's geo-blocked from the States. So, like, I've used it in reverse too. Yeah. Let's see the Canadian TV industry get up in arms about that. But there are other legitimate reasons for using a VPN.
So what you're saying is people should call their CRTC office.
I like how these people complain and they say, because I justify using the VPN because the Canadian content of Netflix here in Canada isn't as good in the U.S., so I should be able to have access to that content because I'm paying $7.99 a month. I love comments like that. It just makes me laugh.
It's funny, though. It is actually true that U.S. Netflix has at least different Canadian content. I'm not sure if they have more, but they have different. But that's the licensing thing.
Yep.
Because that's the whole point, is you have access to it as a Canadian through other means, whereas an American doesn't, because they're geo-blocked from it. So they have to pay Netflix because they're the ones who has the licensing agreement for it. So it's all this convoluted, and it's, I've heard that Netflix wants to get more global licensing agreements. That's probably not going to happen anytime soon. I wish Canadian Netflix had more stuff on it, but I'm actually decently happy with what's on Canadian Netflix anyway.
I am too.
I said, I haven't actually used my VPN to do that. I just did it this weekend, coincidentally, because I was in the States, so I was accessing US Netflix, and I started watching things that I wanted to finish watching this weekend.
Yeah.
But I haven't used it for months. I had to reinstall it on my laptop because I didn't have it installed. I don't know. People aren't entitled to every piece of content ever for free.
I get the feeling that it was Netflix got pressure to do something And so they reiterated their current stance, which is, you shouldn't do this.
No, they were contacted because it was some torrent site wrote this article without contacting anyone, basically saying that, no, Netflix is cracking down, torrentfreak.com. So they were saying that they were taking new steps. They had a couple of users who complained.
Yeah. Well, I bet you that they don't take it as seriously as the world thinks they are anyway. And you know what? I don't think we're going to delve too much into it. We're not going to delve. Go ahead.
Let's not do the last one.
Yeah, we're not going to do the last link. Suffice to say, if you want us to talk about the fact that there should be more Canadian porn, let us know in the comment section of this podcast, and we can talk about that next episode. That's all I'll say. Geez, this is perhaps the longest episode ever.
That's why I'm like, no, let's just not.
Exactly.
I think I'm not going to be able to run my errand anymore. I could have had my red wine.
Geez, well, there you go. Just start drinking out of the bottle. We won't mind. Greg, where can people find you when you're not hanging out here every couple of weeks talking Canadian television?
Here's my script. When I'm not watching TV, I can be found writing about it at tv-eh.com and tweeting via the @TV_A account or @Greg_David.
Oh, we're laughing at him.
Wow.
I don't care.
Sorry. You missed one of the beats that I wanted in there. Can we try it again? But can you go with the motivation that you've just lost your Easter basket?
What?
I just ignore him.
Diane, just go. Go, Diane.
But he didn't throw it to me yet. How can I just go?
Diane.
I just threw it to you.
Heath just threw it to you, but it wasn't on his script, but he just threw it to you.
Yeah, I didn't have my script ready, Greg. Okay. Well, I guess I could say ditto. Like, I help run the TVA website, so that's at tv-eh.com, or it's on Twitter at tv_eh. And I'm on Twitter myself at DEEKAYW, where I talk about all kinds of hodgepodgy things.
Is that your website, hodgepodgythings.com?
Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. Where can you be found, Anthony?
Find me on Twitter @AnthonyMarco. Find all my other stuff at anthonymarco.com. And that's about it. A long episode this week. Episode 173 of the TVA podcast is in the books. Everyone take a deep breath, folks. And now back to your regularly scheduled program.